Hello, everyone, and welcome to the National Geographic Society program brought to you by Sun Sounds of Arizona. My name is Chuck Berry. I'm your Sun Sounds volunteer reader. I'll be reading articles published in October of 2024 by the Geographic Society. I hope you enjoy the program. We'll begin with this article, Why Do Animals Eat Their Own Poop? And other animals, too. This natural survival strategy, known as coprophagy, reveals how wildlife makes the most of every available resource. While poop is decidedly not on the menu for us humans, it's a normal food for many animals. Scientists have observed deer snacking on Asian elephant dung, dogs and lemurs consuming human poop, and salamanders eating bat droppings. In Spain's Sierra de Guara Mountains, female goats snack on bird guano, while in Brazil's Atlantic Forest, rats and possums visit otter latrines to consume feces. In one study in Tanzania, scientists remarked that hooded vultures showed more interest in protein-rich lion feces than a freshly killed carcass. The lion had not gone more than 10 meters from the feces when several hooded vultures dropped to the ground and swallowed the feces rapidly, they wrote. So why is the act of eating feces so widespread? Far from a useless waste material, feces often contain valuable calories and nutrients that weren't taken up by the host animal. Coprophagy may help animals get extra calories when their usual food sources are limited, or acquire nutrients that are hard to come by in their regular diet. Poop might also contain gut bacteria that give digestive systems a boost, kind of like a wild probiotic. Feces can have lots of diverse roles for wildlife, says Hannah Rempel, an ecologist at the University of Texas at Austin. A nutritional boost from poop. Coprophagy can also mean eating your own poop. Various species of rabbits and hares digest their food again to extract further nutrients that their swift digestive process missed the first time. When food is scarce, some species, like reindeer in Svalbard, Norway, feed on goose droppings during the short Arctic summer. In winter, plateau pikas in Tibet eat the dung of domestic yaks. It's likely for similar reasons that red foxes in Scotland's Cairngorms National Park frequently consume the feces of dogs walked in the area, as evidenced by the presence of dog DNA in fox scats, says ecologist Xavier Lambin of Aberdeen University in the UK. He and his colleagues' research show that fox feces are especially abundant in dog DNA in years when foxes' usual prey, field voles, are scarce. Laboratory analysis reveal that dog poop is very nutritious, with a similar calorie content to cooked chickpeas. Instead of having years of starvation and years of plenty, foxes must be all right every year, Lambin says. A vitamin C. While driving through coral reefs around Bonaire, Rempel saw sturgeonfish and parrotfish darting toward fecal pellets drifting down from large schools of brown chromis fish, a behavior previously observed on some Indo-Pacific reefs. I have seen two fish fight for the same feces, Rempel recalls. She and her colleagues counted that almost 85% of the observed brown chromis fecal pellets were eaten by fishes. the vast majority of them by parrotfishes and sturgeonfishes. Sturgeonfish and parrotfish usually graze on algae, which are relatively poor in micronutrients vital to survival, such as calcium, phosphorus, and zinc. Algae is also low in protein, though the fish do also consume some protein-containing cyanobacteria and detritus attached to algae. But brown chromis fish, which eat plankton, produce feces chuck full of protein, as well as micronutrients. Rempel likens these proteins to a kind of nutritional supplement, or vitamin C, for the fish, Rempel explains. A diverse gut is a happy gut. Barbara Drigo, a microbial ecologist at the University of South Australia, suspects that for many bird species, coprophagy also provides beneficial gut bacteria. The logic is similar to fecal transplants in people, in which bacteria containing stool extracts from healthy people improve the gut flora in those with certain health conditions. Drigo believes that some migratory bird species, once they arrive in a new area, may consume the droppings of local birds to acquire gut bacteria that help them more effectively digest food from their new environment. Young Eurasian coot chicks frequently consume their parents' poop, which may similarly provide them with bacteria needed for processing local food resources. And in experiments with captive ostrich chicks at a research facility in South Africa, the birds given their parents' feces to eat had more diverse gut flora and matured faster than in chicks raised without feces. At 8 weeks of age, the feces-fed chicks were nearly 10% heavier and were less likely to die from gut disease. Exposing the immune system to a rich diversity of gut bacteria is beneficial for health, Drigo says. In general, the birds that eat feces are much more healthy than the birds that don't. Pros and cons. Coprophagy, however, comes with risks. Bird droppings, for instance, may contain dangerous chemicals from sewage, pesticides, or other human-made harmful compounds. Eating poop could also cause animals to pick up diseases, gut parasites, or harmful bacteria. But at least when it comes to natural threats, the benefits of coprophagy might outweigh the risks for many animals. Animal digestive systems are likely much tougher and resilient to disease, parasites, and harmful bacteria than human ones. Lamben suggests that perhaps people have evolved to find poop inherently disgusting, so we won't eat it and get sick. When a dog sees feces, it doesn't seem to react as if it smells bad, he says. If it's good for you at all, you're not going to deem it distasteful. And that completes this tasteful article titled, Why Do Animals Eat Their Own Poop and Other Animals Too? And there was no author cited for this article. The second article is titled, What Are Parasocial Relationships Doing to Our Brains? Social media has given fans unprecedented access to celebrities and public figures, but experts say these one-sided parasocial relationships aren't always unhealthy. When pop singer Chappelle Roan spoke out against the invasive fan behavior she had been experiencing since her sudden rise to popularity earlier this year, stalking, unwanted touching, invasive contact with her friends and family members, she kicked off a major discussion about the relationship between a celebrity and their audience and the downside of so-called parasocial relationships. A parasocial relationship, or PSR, is generally defined as a relationship in which one member of the relationship isn't aware of the other, i.e. a fan loves a celebrity, but the celebrity doesn't know they exist. Not restricted to celebrities, PSRs also exist between people and fictional characters, whether portrayed by an actor or not. Digital media has given fans unprecedented access to celebrities, but are platforms like X, which is Twitter, and Instagram contributing to dangerous amounts of entitlement on the part of fans? What makes a relationship parasocial? The first examinations of parasocial relationships came in the 1950s, when psychologists tried to understand how television viewers reacted to the hosts, MCs, and TV personalities speaking to them directly out of the screen, a novel concept at the time. It caused concern that viewers at home wouldn't be able to tell the difference between the relationships they had with a television personality and ones they had with, quote, real people. Victims of the magic mirror, as Richard Horton and Donald Wohl described in the 1956 paper that coined the phrase para-social interaction. Later in the 70s and 80s, scholars began to hypothesize that forming parasocial relationships was driven by loneliness and isolation, and that lonelier people were more likely to form strong parasocial relationships as compensation. However, says Gail Stever, a professor at Sunny Empire and an expert on parasocial relationships, further research has not borne out that hypothesis. Yes, lonely people form parasocial relationships, she says, but so do not lonely people, who are just as likely to form a connection with that person on the screen. Stever is the author of books, including The Psychology of Celebrity and the recently released Parasocial Experiences, co-written with David Giles, the latter of which uses evolutionary psychology to examine the role of parasocial attachments in society and culture. We as human beings have a brain that is hardwired for survival and reproduction, she points out. If a character or celebrity brings a person a feeling of comfort, safety, and security, your brain doesn't care if you know this person in real life or not. It will automatically form a lasting attachment. Which isn't necessarily a bad thing. A healthy parasocial relationship can be a source of strength, encouragement, and inspiration. Having a favorite singer, actor, or character doesn't inherently indicate loneliness. In fact, as Stever has observed, the better connections a person has in real life, the stronger and healthier their PSRs will be. A new type of parasocial relationship emerges online. But digital interaction complicates these natural relationships. Creators on YouTube, TikTok, and Instagram actively cultivate parasocial relationships with audiences as part of their business model. Since the rise of social media, influencers have relied on a perceived, authentic, two-way relationship between them and their audience to ensure commercial loyalty. But as Chapel Roan has shown, this can backfire. When fans are gaining access to the celebrity through social media posts, it increases the perception of intimacy. People think they really have more of a relationship than they do, says Mel Stanfill, a professor of digital humanities at the University of Central Florida, and the author of the recently published book, Fandom is Ugly. They point out that the phenomenon of parasocial relationships, however intrinsic to human behavior, has been immensely amplified by social media. The conventional arrangement of PSRs, where the fan or follower has no actual contact with a celebrity or creator, gets visibly disrupted by our new forums for communication. A celebrity might see a fan's message or even reply. The brain processes mediated images the same way it processes images encountered in real life, Stever says. How parasocial relationships turn toxic. The illusion of intimacy can feel very, very real to a human brain, beginning with watching someone on a screen, and enhanced by the possibility of direct communication in a comment section. As fandoms became more visible throughout the latter half of the 20th century, they became associated with youth and immaturity, even though many adults did and do partake in fan culture throughout their life. But it's true that adolescents are particularly prone to developing intense parasocial relationships, Stever says, because it can be a chance to practice real adult feelings on someone at a safe distance. Stever sees Chappell Roan's unwanted fan interactions as a consequence of the intensity of adolescent PSRs. The kinds of toxic behaviors Chappell is describing are characteristic of adolescence, says Stever. I'm not saying it's completely unheard of for adult fans to behave this way, but it's pretty rare. Behavior that might have been limited to one person or a few people might be, thanks to social media, given the chance to spread. Online fandoms, especially large ones full of adolescents with strong emotions, can engender bad behavior among adults. You get forms of hostility that are born out of an online community where people are egging each other on, Stanfill says. When you interact with everything through your phone, the fact that there's a human being on the other end can often get lost. There's a disinhibition of it all. There's a sort of filter bubble or echo chamber effect where people convince themselves, everyone agrees with me and therefore we are all righteous in our approach. So a parasocial relationship that starts with healthy boundaries can turn sour when a mob mentality forms, resulting in harassment. Bad actors in fandoms are more visible than they ever were. They are more able to coordinate with each other, and so they are louder, even though they're only a small slice of the fandom population, Stanfill explained. Parasocial relationships are natural and not inherently unhealthy, but as Stever says, anything that can be true about a regular social relationship can be true about a parasocial relationship. Are they positive? Can they be good for us? Absolutely. Can they be negative? Can they be toxic for us? We all know examples of that. And that completes the article. The title was, What Are Parasocial Relationships Doing to Our Brain? It was written by Allegra Rosenberg. The next title is, Are These the Most Haunted Pubs in the UK? Get into the spirit of the season with a visit to one of these ghostly establishments, by Hannah Wild and Navain Gonasekera. The UK doesn't shy away from the more gruesome, unnerving aspects of its history. In fact, plenty of visitors' attractions, such as the London Dungeon and its Edinburgh counterpart, make a virtue of it. No surprise, then, that some of the country's historic pubs also celebrate their dark side. From the heart of London to rural Scotland, these haunted pubs are allegedly patrolled by ghostly residents, some mischievous, others unnerving. Step inside if you dare. The Drover's Inn at Stirling. Set against the dramatic backdrop of Loch Lomond, the Drover's Inn exudes eeriness from the off, with its rustic stone walls, flickering candlelight, and a taxidermied bird casting a watchful eye from the bar. The inn is said to be occupied by the spirit of a young girl who drowned in the loch, with overnight guests claiming to have felt a cold, ghostly touch or a lingering icy draft in their rooms. You'll find information about the ghostly goings on dotted around the 18th century pub, including on the menus, and staff are happy to share their spectral tales too. Then there's Grace Neal's Bar in County Down. Founded in 1611, Grace Neal's Bar is among Northern Ireland's oldest pubs, and its namesake, Grace Neal, is said to have lingered here long after her death in 1918. Traditional dark wood paneled interiors set the tone, and while the place recently underwent a partial refurbishment, Grace's spirit is most often felt in the bar's original snugs and stairwells. Be sure to listen out for her otherworldly footsteps, often heard pacing the floors above. The Golden Fleece in York. It would be easy to overlook this small, unassuming, two-story tavern tucked away among York's medieval streets, but it's said to be home to 15 ghosts, including Lady Anne Pickett, often heard climbing the creaking staircase, and Jeff Munro, a Canadian airman whose antagonizing gaze apparently follows visitors from the third floor. The Grade II listed building has a snug lounge with antique furniture, plus four bedrooms for overnight guests. So if you're feeling brave, you can bed down and wait for the pub's ghostly inhabitants to make their presence felt. The Sutton Arms in London. Anticipate a friendly welcome at this old-school boozer near the Barbican, where pubgoers are said to be greeted by a mischievous spirit. Known as Charlie, the red-haired ghost is said to flash a smile at unsuspecting visitors before vanishing into thin air. His presence is fleeting, so for a chance of catching a glimpse, settle in at his favorite table in the corner of the bar. The stained glass ceiling and craft beers are a large part of the pub's appeal, but it's the prospect of spotting Charlie that'll make your visit memorable. The Skirrid Mountain Inn in Abergavenny. Blood-curdling murmurs are part of the reception at this Monmouthshire former courthouse, which is today one of Wales's oldest pubs. The original hanging beam looms over the stairwell, complete with rope marks to remind visitors of its sinister past. There are overnight guest hunts, too, during which Ouija boards and other specialist equipment are said to reveal the presence of Fanny Price, a former landlady who died here in the 17th century. And if that's not enough of a thrill, venture to the surrounding woods, which are said to be just as haunted. The Whistle Binkies in Edinburgh. This renowned bar and music venue may be less than four decades old, but its ghostly apparitions date back much further. In the 17th century, this cavernous subterranean space housed the city's poorest residents and criminals within a series of stone chambers. And today it's said to be frequented by a pair of poltergeists lurking in billowing cloaks, allegedly responsible for fiddling with doorknobs and even trapping staff in the cellar. Their sinister shuffles echo through the quirky venue, and private cave rooms offer the chance for an up-close encounter with the phantoms. And finally, there's the Cross Keys Inn in County Antrim. Dating back to 1654, this charming white stone cottage is Northern Ireland's oldest thatched pub. Its walls are adorned with eclectic ornaments that pay homage to the generations of visitors who set foot through the wooden latched door. There's allegedly a resident ghost here, too, a tall, shadowy male figure, often seen hiding in corners or trudging past the yellow-framed windows at dawn. With traditional Irish music performances and a selection of fine whiskies, it's the perfect place to toast the night and the spirits. And that completes the article, Are These the Most Haunted Pubs in the UK? And that also completes the broadcast today. I hope you enjoyed it. This has been the National Geographic Magazine program, brought to you by Sunsounds of Arizona. My name is Chuck Berry. It's been my privilege to be your Sunsounds volunteer reader. The articles I've read today were published in October of 2024 by the Geographic Society. Stay well, stay safe, have a wonderful week, and keep listening to Sunsounds of Arizona with its premium programming. And if you've missed an article you'd like to hear, go to the sunsounds.org website, click on the broadcast info and audio, then click on Demand. You'll see a list of articles there. Hopefully you'll find the one you're looking for. Thank you so much for spending your time with me today.